Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Charles Camuglia. Will be telling us a little bit about his experience with wheelchair dance. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with the American Dance Wheels Foundation.
Well, I've only just recently found them out. We've been looking for somebody that can sort of give us some ideas about wheelchairs, because we're doing the wheelchairs for quite a while, and I feel like we need to have a little bit more up our sleeve of what else we can do with our residents in a safe way. And with American Wheels, they teach people that have got abilities with the wheelchairs to, you know, use their arms and all that sort of thing. In my case, we don't have the people who's got that strength to do that, because they're the elderly and fragile. So we actually dance with them, the two of us. One person pushes, the other one leads the person into a dance situation. And with Wheels Association, we're getting ideas of what we can do with them and with their ideas. And I've talked to Aubrey, and she's quite happy to sort of work with us in the future too.
So, what got you in? Go ahead.
Sorry.
Oh, quite all right. I was just wondering, what inspired you to get involved with wheelchair dancing? What sparked your interest?
Well, wheelchair dancing has been a part of my life for the past 16, almost 17 years now. I'm a dance teacher by trade. I've been teaching for about 40 years, and I specialise in wedding couples. The other thing I started doing was going into nursing homes and entertaining residents in nursing homes. And while I was just entertaining them, we felt that we can do something to make the residents feel a bit more in one with us as well, as just sitting there and watching. So I started bringing them out and dancing with them with their hands, and one person was pushing them. And it seemed to work, and they were having such a good time because they felt really important. And we started doing it more and more, and then I progressed to the state where I was dancing with the residents more than doing the entertaining. The entertaining was the dance with the wheelchairs, and making them feel good, making them feel they're experiencing a time in their lives where they used to dance. These people used to dance 7 days a week, 5 days a week. And in many cases, we were the first people that ever got to dance with them after their partners had died 10 years ago, whatever the situation might be. And they felt like we were treating them like normal, rather than sort of treating them like someone in a wheelchair. We treat them like they can dance, and there's no real restrictions for what they can do with us. So they felt really great. And the reward of that just became bigger and by my recent partner 7 years ago, and she's worked with nursing homes all the time, and she was a dance teacher as well, so it was a perfect combination. So we've been doing it together for 7 years, but in total I've been doing 17 years, and the idea of being able to give to someone, whether they're in wheelchairs or in water beds or in beds, we still dance with them, and it creates a fantastic, rewarding atmosphere for everybody, not just them, but also for their family and also the carers.
So, are there any challenges in coordinating a dance program for someone who is confined to a bed, as you mentioned?
Yes, there is always restrictions. The restrictions are quite numerous because certain people can't move an arm, they can't move their head, or it's been a heart stroke victim, or it's been a person who's just fragile to do anything, sort of, you know, lifting, even touching them. Sometimes it's their hands are so fragile as to actually bruise them. So we find out all these details about the type of restriction that person might have, and we go with that because I'm very inventive with what we can do with people on the chair and make them experience a good time. So yes, to answer to your question, yes, we find what restrictions they have, and we work around that by the best possible, safest way that we can.
So, in your time doing this sort of dance, is there any success story that stands out for you?
Well, there's many success stories. In actual fact, just yesterday, one of my people who's a resident of one of the homes, it's called Pam's Story. They actually did a film clip about her. She'd had a stroke, and she used to be a dance teacher for 25 years or something before she had the stroke. And for her, dancing was her greatest passion in her life that you could ever imagine. So when she had this heart stroke, she was restricted to the wheelchair and movement. She could only move her right hand and her right leg. Her left arm was completely unavailable to her. And one day we were going to a particular home where she was, and the carer asked her, "Would you like to come and see the dancing man? He seems to have, you know, lots of fun and with the people. Do you want to come and take a look?" And she's going, no, I don't want anything to do with dancing because I feel bad about it." And they convinced her to come, and she came, and she was sitting there. She was sitting in the chair, and what I do is I get everybody to sit in a big circle, and I approach every single person one by one individually. And I was told about her, but only a short amount of information, because it was last minute that she decided to come. And I walked up to her and I looked at her and I smiled and I said, "Shall we?" And she couldn't say no. She just, "Okay." And we brought her out on the chair and we danced with her on the chair. And then she says, wait a minute. "Can I stand up?" And I do this with certain people at when I feel like their strength in their arms or their body is okay. So I safely, with my partners backing behind me always, the two of us always work well together. And I says, "Want to try, you sure?" And he says, "Yes, I've got to try." And she had tears in her eyes. And I moved the footage for the chair and got it to stand, put her feet down, and I says, "Which is your leg? This is your strong leg. Okay, let's put all your weight in this leg." And I take them underneath the arm and under the armpits and slowly draw her towards me while Candy moves the chair back so she can actually start to stand, but moves back just slightly. And I lifted her up And we stood there for a moment. And I always play music which is associated with the elderly people. All the music of their days, Doris Day's, and Frank Sinatra's, all the songs that they like. Anyway, she's looking at me, and we're playing Que Sera Sera at the time of Doris Day. And she stood there, and I held her up. I said, "Can I hold you in dance position?" And her good arm was the one that she could use there, and her other arm, Candy, moves her arm onto my shoulders here. And I stood there, and I just swayed, and I says, "Que Sera Sera," and just started singing to her. And she's bawling her eyes out. And she says, "Man, do you realize this is the first time I've got out of this wheelchair to dance with somebody? You have no idea." I says, "I think I do. I do understand, because what your passion is why I'm doing this." And that story became really well known all around the circuits for I'll get a copy for you, and I'll send it to you, because they came back and they wanted her story, so the TV crew came and did a video of her, and we reenacted the dance scene with her, and I also called up her old dance teacher who brought her to the point of being a dance teacher, and who taught her, and he was still around, and I invited him, and we had a big like a party type situation, and she's the head of the whole thing, and he came along, and he walked in, he said hello, and she melted. She just totally loved it, and she was so speechless to a point that sort of I can't describe how great the feeling is for someone else, but you can tell. And then I went and asked her for the dance, and she said, "You have no idea what you've done." And I says, "Thank you, but it's all about you. It's nothing about me. It's all about you, and so that's why I do what I do." So when you said, "Is there something special?" I've got many of those type of situations, but this one became famous for all the retired villagers in that circuit. They've got about 40 retired villagers, and they played the video to all the homes, and everybody just loved it. And sort of since then, people called me up and says, "Yes, please come to our place. Come to our place." And it became like a snowball for us in sort of creating something really nice for the people.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Jenny Lee Almeida from CMHA. So tell me a little bit about your mental health work.
So currently, as one of the mental health educators in the Windsor Essex County for Canadian Mental Health Association, we really are focusing on just relevant topics that we believe our community could really benefit from learning, such as, you know, whether that relates to information about having access to a pandemic therapist or an urgent care clinic for mental health needs. Also a lot of psychoeducation in terms of all the various feelings we've been feeling as of late, you know, experiencing that isolation, loneliness, and really, you know, how do we manage and deal with all those stressors that we experience, obviously, during, you know, to varying degrees with COVID.
So in terms of challenges you mentioned, such as isolation, how can people go about getting around those and staying at their best from a mental health standpoint?
Well, with isolation and loneliness, I know that a lot, you know, again, every single one of us, loneliness and isolation are really very subjective. You know, even if I were to say we remove COVID, we could still, as human beings, experience these two constructs, these two...
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Center for Teaching and Learning at the University of Windsor is calling for nominations for GA and TA awards for educational practice and educational leadership, recognizing contributions that graduate and undergraduate teaching assistants make to the University of Windsor's learning environment. The deadline for nominations is May 28, 2021 at 5 p.m. Visit uwindsor.ca/ctl/411/GATA-awards for more information and to submit a nomination.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Charles Camuglia about his experiences with wheelchair dance, and from Jenny Lee Almeida at the CMHA. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Carly Buscom, who will be telling us a little bit about healing sports. So tell me a little bit about healing sports.
Yeah, so my name is Carly Buscom. I'm the executive director of New England Healing Sports Association. The acronym that we use is NESA, just so that we don't have to say that long title every time. But basically what we are is we are an adaptive sports organization providing sport and recreation opportunities to people with all different sorts of disabilities. We started in 1972 by a group of Vietnam War era veterans that were returning from war with new injuries, but still not willing to give up their love of skiing. So we started as a ski organization in the beginning. They kind of band together and taught each other how to ski with their new bodies. You know, some of them came back with amputated limbs. So they figured out a way. And we've kind of been doing that same thing for the last 50 years or so. Over that time, we've certainly grown, and we now offer year-round programming. So we do skiing, we do snowboarding, we do kayaking, paddleboarding, and we serve pretty much anyone with any disability. So originally, we served only veterans with physical disabilities, but over the many years of our operation, we now serve anyone, veteran or civilian, with physical disabilities, cognitive disabilities, all sorts. So our goal is basically to just get people out and active and enjoying the outdoors and challenging themselves.
So I'm curious, from the inception of the group, when these veterans began, I'd have to imagine there's a huge mental health impact on being able to keep active after what they'd been through, just finding something in their life to focus on. Now, I know a lot of mental health concerns wouldn't have been as well diagnosed in that point in history, but the impact would seem to be the same.
Sure, that's actually a really, really good point. And certainly back in the 1970s, you know, PTSD... You know, it certainly wasn't as widely known as it is today. We still have deep roots with our veteran population. And we've found, you know, I've only been with the organization for the last 7 years or so. But in my time here, I've witnessed firsthand what getting outdoors and what socializing with other veterans or peers does to not just the body and the mind, but the soul. You know, a lot of the veterans that are diagnosed with PTSD tend to isolate themselves from the rest of the world. And just, you know, just seeing them get out of their comfort zones, being a little timid and shy at first and kind of hesitant, tentative to try the new sport that we're doing that any given day, from then, you know, really getting into the sport, really socializing with their peers. It just, it does wonders for the mind and our participants' mental health.
So what sorts of modified equipment do you provide?
Yeah, so really depends on the sport. We have a wide variety of adaptive equipment. For example, the most obvious piece of modified equipment is called a sit ski. And there are different types of sit skis that, you know, we would select depending on the person's abilities or their challenges. But the two main types are a mono ski. That is basically a sit ski apparatus that balances on one single ski. And then the other version is the bi ski, which is a sit ski apparatus, appropriately named because it balances on two skis. We also have a wide variety of different snowboard equipment. We've got, for kayaking, we've got a fully adaptive kayak that has something that looks almost like training wheels on the back, which are called pontoons. They just add a little extra flotation and make the kayak less tippy and less likely to, you know, overturn into the water. We also have some adaptations in the kayak that provide extra lumbar support and lateral support for those that may have difficulty sitting up on their own. So there's a wide variety of different adaptations that we have for the equipment that we use in our program.
So I'm curious, in your time with the organization, is there any success story you've experienced that stands out for you?
Well, this one is fairly, there's a lot of stories. There's a ton, and it's, you know, it's part of why I love the job that I have here, and it's part of why, you know, I keep coming back, because working at a place like this, you see a lot of people that are faced with many different challenges, and more often than not, they overcome those challenges, and it's just a really, really cool thing. But one story that kind of stands out to me right now happened fairly recently. We were holding a clinic for a group of veterans with disabilities, and this particular veteran that the story is about, she has ALS, and it's pretty far progressed. She uses a wheelchair in her daily life, power chair. She is not able to speak. She communicates with her eyes, basically. And she's been to our events before. So she has skied, traditionally she skied in a sit ski. But this time she came to the event and she said, you know what, my goal this clinic is to stand up and ski. So we kind of put our heads together. We put some very experienced instructors on her lesson, and we were successfully able to have her stand up and ski in an apparatus called a slider, which essentially looks like almost a walker on skis. But she was able to bear weight with some assistance and stand up and ski down the bunny hill. And while that may not seem like a lot for most people, it was huge for this particular individual. And, you know, the smile was ear to ear. Everybody that was spectating was in tears. It was just a really, really moving experience to see somebody that's, you know, sits down and you know, so much of her life has been affected by her ALS, but she's still shown tenacity and overcome so many different challenges. And standing up to ski was one of those challenges, and she did it.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
Thanks. My friends, I'm still floored by Charles's story. For many of us who have acquired a disability, probably the hardest thing to imagine is getting out there and doing something we once loved once again. For there can be this sense of loss, this sense of being unclear as to what we're still capable of. Once you have that moment that says, my life is not over, I'm still a strong, capable person, changes everything. Especially when we have a moment doing something that we're passionate about. Disability life is not a loss, my friends. It is an adaptation. Truth is, the more we view it that way, the stronger we become. As an able-bodied society, we might look upon something and say, oh, that's impossible. But is it? Do we live with that presumption that something can't be achieved? And just let that settle, or we challenge that notion. It is an easy thing at times to be dismissive and to say, I think that's impossible, which can come from a place of our own fear, our own self-doubt. You might figure, because I, as a perfectly able-bodied person, could never climb a mountain, a person with a vision impairment couldn't either. But don't limit yourselves. Don't limit others. Don't let that anxiety, that fear, that exploration overtake you. The truth is, no one has developed a formula or a roadmap for human potential. People have done things that have defied the odds in so many ways. People have broken through the impossible standard. Which, for those of you who aren't familiar with my theory on that, is finding one reason after another to tell someone what they can't do, not be of support. Pretty soon you end up creating a wall no one gets across. You can choose to live with that, in isolation and in hopelessness, or you can choose to say, I'm going to see for myself whether this can be done. I'm not just going to accept somebody's word on that. The truth is, expectations are not facts. They are not the sole defining factors that will tell a person what they can or cannot be. People, if driven enough, and if creative enough, will find ways to surprise and to surpass. I mean, that's how all progress is built, isn't it? Choosing to look at things as just the process of accomplishment, of creation. If we look at it all as doing something as a hurdle or an act of spite to prove to society how much stronger we are than we're assumed to be, we lose focus. If we see things as, I want to accomplish this, so I will find a way to accomplish this, progress can be made. Hope can be built. My point in that is, do it for the right reasons. Do the things you love because they're the things you love. Do the things you want to do because they're what you want to do. Do it mostly for yourself. If a precedent is set, and the world becomes a better place, so be it. Nothing is lost in that. But, in your heart of hearts, just know that you're a better, stronger person because you followed the path that is true to you. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.